when you were here before. Couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You float like a feather. Beautiful world. And wish I was special. You're so very special.
Hello, and welcome to episode 204 of Film Night. My name's Richie.
My name's Henry.
My name's
and
Ted.
Today, oh, sorry.
I didn't know whether you wanted me to this week or not. Do you want?
Yeah, you can do. Yeah, can do. Go for it.
Yeah. My name's Teffy.
Hey.
Thank you. I'm in.
And in today's episode, we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Yes, as everyone may have noticed, we're missing a couple of regular members of the show. Joseph Pett McClafferty is—he's either still on holiday or just recently got back from holiday, and so wasn't able to join.
Just got back, I think.
Just got back, yeah. And Jack Francis Clarke, well, what can we say? It's just the usual lack of commitment from him. Just
par for the course.
I think his exact words were, "Fuck off with that. I'm not bothering this week." So
I actually didn't know he was on this podcast.
It's very rare that he'll actually show up, but we got to go with what we do. In lieu of those two, we have recruited Matthew Philip Michael Teppy McLaughlin. How you doing?
Very well. Good to be back 2 weeks on the trot.
Yeah, fresh from another episode we've just done on Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
I hope everybody's enjoyed that episode.
You started to become a bit of a regular.
Yeah, well, there's rumours, there's transfer requests, there's money floating about.
Super sub tab, that's what you are.
I've heard things.
it's always much easier whenever you're coming on Tep. You're always very on the ball and just very easy to schedule in, much different than with Jack Francis, which is especially impressive considering that you're in Australia.
Well, that's it, 79-hour time difference, and I still get my priorities right, don't I?
Absolutely. Really appreciate you coming on.
We even asked Jack Francis just to send a little voice message, 60 seconds long, just to give his opinions on the film. He couldn't even be bothered to do that. So
he hasn't even done that.
This is what we're working with, listeners. I mean, the lack of commitment is shocking. It's always nice to have Teppy on, and I think it'd be an interesting episode, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to hearing everyone's thoughts. With that in mind, does anyone have anything else they sort of want to bring up before we just get straight into the review?
I'd like to mention something, lads, because I just had a former guest of a podcast living with me for 2 weeks. He was sleeping in my spare bedroom. Because he just got a new job in Manchester, so I helped him out. As he was moving over here, just trying to, as he was finding somewhere to live and stuff. So, let him in.
It wasn't
Matthew. Is it by any chance Barry?
I'll give you a clue. They left these filters for rolling your cigarettes.
It was Matthew Patrick.
It was Matthew Patrick. Yeah, so he's just started a job in Manchester, and obviously didn't have anywhere to live. He sort of started on a Monday. So I had him over on the Sunday evening a couple of weeks ago, and he's been here for a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's great. Well, I made up for him.
So yeah. I think it's obviously good for him. He's got a place out Broughton way now. He's moving in today, I think, actually. It's bank holiday we're recording, so.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's good to have him here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure it was good to have him there. I'm sure it was also maybe a little bit of a hassle, maybe, at times.
Yeah, a little bit. On the week, so on the Friday, he went back to the Fylde on the Fridays. So he wasn't here on the weekends and stuff. He went to a cricket club and stuff like that. But it was pretty decent, to be fair. Like, by the time we'd all got in from work and stuff and made a bit of food, just sat down, watched a bit of telly and watched a bit of football and stuff. It's quite nice.
No, he's a good lad.
Yeah. So, and he said he wants to come on again soon. So if he's in Manchester, me and him might be able to go and see some stuff together. You know, he's going to get him on and stuff. So,
That'd be great.
Well, there's always a spot because Jack's never here. So there's always a spot.
No, that's brilliant. Well done to you, Chives, then, if you're listening. Absolutely made up for you.
Yeah. I don't think Guardians of the Galaxy and Marvel films are his bag, are they? So.
No, probably not. But then they're not yours either.
No, that's true.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just get straight into the review now then. This week, we are talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Here's a clip.
I miss you so much. And maybe if you open yourself up to it, there's a possibility.
I don't think so, Quinn.
Quill.
I don't think so.
Well, what I'm trying to say is...
Peter, you know this is an open line, right?
What?
We're listening to everything you're saying.
And it is painful.
And you're just telling me now?
We were hoping it would stop on its own.
But I switched it over to private.
What color button did you push?
Blue! For the blue suit!
Oh, no.
Blue is the open line for everyone.
Orange is for blue.
What?
Black is for orange. Yellow is for green. Green is for red. And red is for yellow.
No, yellow is for yellow. Green is for red. Red is for green.
I don't think so.
Try it then.
Hello!
You're right.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is directed by James Gunn, and it stars Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, Pom Clementeef, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, and Sean Gunn. And Will Poulter, sorry. The synopsis is, Peter Quill, still reeling from the loss of Gamora, must rally his team around him to defend the universe along with protecting one of their own. A mission that, if not completed successfully, could quite possibly lead to the end of the Guardians as we know them. What did you two think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3?
Well, we've got to get the super sub first, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Put you on the spot.
Well, I'm going to start with Guardians of the Galaxy generally, right? Just to give it, you know...
Context.
Especially living with Ebony, I've watched pretty much every Marvel film now, and I feel as though there's always about 300 more I could watch. but she did put on Guardians of the Galaxy first one, and I started watching it. And I thought I can't do it. It was one of my least favorites, and I don't normally ever say that. I normally can just get through it, but whatever it was, I don't know. I wasn't enjoying it. Which is strange. However,
I think you did mention that in the Willy Wonka episode. Sorry.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. But then I was kind of forced to, I suppose, watch the full, but it was in the cinema. And I actually didn't mind it in the end. I suppose I didn't know what I was expecting because I didn't get through the first one fully. I'd had enough. I'd pied it off. But yeah. I think being forced to sit there, it wasn't so bad. Wasn't too bad. But that's not a resounding round of applause to the film. It was more just, it wasn't that bad.
Are you talking about the third one now?
Now I'm talking about the third one. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, interesting. Do you have any sort of idea in your head what it is about this one specifically as opposed the first Guardians film specifically as opposed to like the other Marvel films? Like what it is that didn't quite click with you with this one?
I suppose it was a bit much off the bat, like the level of, generally speaking, I do prefer a bit more realism to films, you know, like I do, and anything that's a bit too much of a stretch, sci-fi.
Like Willy Wonka or Tonga Ninja.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But if it's too much of a stretch, you know, if they start duplicating the Oompa Loompas rather than making them orange, or if they start, you know, this is...
Yes, I see.
It's playing with me.
So is it like... Because this one's a bit more like space-oriented and stuff. There's a lot more like alien shite and stuff. Is that sort of the kind of thing you're not usually into?
That's it, yeah. Less dialogue, you know. Even things like Star Wars, I prefer the dialogue stuff to the, you know, shooting through space and firing scenes and all of that sort of stuff. Mm. I prefer.
Interesting, because you are quite into action ordinarily, aren't you?
Ordinarily, but I like realistic action. I like, you know, okay. I like me guns. I like me James Bond. But my take was it was certainly a picture for the movies rather than a hot. I wouldn't watch it at home. I'm not going to rewatch it at home. It was only made by the sound and the atmosphere of it being in a theatre room, you know, a movie theatre.
Fair enough.
We did have some guns, Tep, but we didn't fire bullets. We fired like sort of lasers, didn't they? You're not into that.
No, yeah. I need me bullets. Yeah, and I want
Bring out the guns and hear it firing.
I do. It needs to be a bit more realistic for me. The pistols in Star Wars and that, and not really. I don't mind the lightsaber stuff because it's different. You know, it's a bit more sword fight. I don't mind that.
It's so all over the place. I can't figure out what it is about them that you don't like.
Yeah. Yeah, now I've got more questions now than the answer you just give it. So,
laser bullets aren't okay, but laser swords are fine.
Yeah.
And it's not, okay. So it's not the fact that you know, animals were talking or anything like that. I can get my head around that to some extent. But it's when it all gets a bit silly, you know, a bit too much.
Are there any sci-fi films that you do that you would sort of put up there as ones you really like? Here's one for you. Have you ever seen Alien?
I don't think so. Maybe. Okay. I'm not sure.
Well, that's like a sci-fi film, but it is rooted in a bit more realism.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. So the more realistic like you can be. Yeah. Yeah. I think about Harry Potter and that sort of stuff where it's really
more realistic, yeah.
Yeah, but it is. It's set in the whole idea, it plays on the Muggle world and it's got more potential to be real, doesn't it? It does.
Yeah, because it's sort of set in the real world and it's a hidden world amongst the real world.
Yeah, okay, I sort of see what you're saying. It's like there's the real world as we know it in there, and then the idea is that there's this like separate world that none of us know about. Mm. So there's the it, yeah. I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. Mm.
Fair enough. Mm. Fair enough. Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm very interested to hear Woody's thought on this one because I think you've been similar to me with the previous two, in that you like the previous two films. So yeah, I'm interested to hear what you thought of this one.
Yeah. So we said this last week when Teppy was on. It's really funny how the Marvel films he likes, we don't. And then the ones that we like, he doesn't. Because we're all, so all of us are fans, the normal four of us on here, have all liked the first two Guardians of the Galaxy films. I went back and listened to episode 100 in our review of the second one. And it was overwhelmingly positive. all round. And that was 6 years ago that one came out. So with this one now, I mean, I wasn't too bothered. I wasn't really interested in sort of revisiting this again. But then I started to see a lot of positive reviews coming out. It got a very high score on Letterboxd. So Jack's review, and it's kind of why I wanted him to send us his thoughts, because he was very, very giving it high praise on Letterboxd.
Yeah, gave it four stars.
Four stars, yep. And I rewatched the second one in anticipation of this. It did drop as a rating, just because I think it is good. It's still a good film, don't get me wrong. I still really enjoyed it. I just think the sort of, I don't know, maybe I've just become a bit more, I don't know, weathered over the years to these kind of things. But I thought there's a few issues with it that kind of made me drop down a bit. And then, yeah, with this one, I was not impressed with this. I definitely agree with Tepe. It's comfortably the worst one of the series. I felt like all the positives of the other two have been undone with this one. I think the comedy just wasn't there. They were really trying to go for it. Started off out of blocks pretty quickly. I had a packed screening. And there's a lot of laughs going on. But then as the film started to get into it, 45 minutes beyond, there was hardly any laughs at all around me. I think that's quite telling, actually, because they were still trying to go for it. But just the whole atmosphere and the camaraderie that the group have had in the previous films, it just wasn't there for me. And I felt that this could have been made by any Marvel director. It had no kind of, like, the stuff that James Gunn had done in the previous ones, it, like, very unique to the other Marvel films. They stand out as being different. But I felt with this one, it could have been done by anyone. And I think that's a shame, really, because it was good to see the second one again and still enjoy it. And, I mean, I'm just, it's just a shame it's ended this way now for these characters, because, you know, this is going to be it for this iteration of the Guardians. And he's kind of teased, I don't know if anyone saw the sort of post-credits trailer scene, but
yeah,
they've sort of teased how it could end up. You know, they're going to do more of them, which obviously we're not interested in. But yeah, I am disappointed, really disappointed with this. I agree with Tepe what he's saying about the scale of it. It looked all right, but I think some of it was actually really clunky. Some of the fight scenes especially were really hard to follow. And yeah, it's just a shame that it's ended this way, because after really enjoying the first two, it would have been nice to have a good sort of conclusion to this story, but it hasn't ended that way for me.
Okay. yeah, I think I'm in a bit of an agreement with you on this, Woody. Maybe not quite as much. I think I did still sort of find it to be fairly decent and stuff, the stuff to enjoy about it. But in general, I definitely did not like this one as much as the previous two Guardians films, and felt like there were things done in the previous Guardians films that were not really done as consistently well in this one. And to be honest, I agree with quite a lot of the points you've already made on it, Wood. I also rewatched the two. I rewatched the two, both of them, the previous Guardian films, and I also rewatched Infinity War and Endgame, because they were in that, and also things that happened in those films are sort of crucial to the plot of this one, which I think is kind of interesting in and of itself. And might even be a reason, one of the reasons why this one isn't quite as good. I rewatched the previous two and I still enjoyed them, but like you, Woody, I think they both went down in terms of my ratings. Not like as though there was anything particularly bad about them, but I think I just got a bit more of a realistic rating put on them, which I think sometimes I think that's the same. Sort of see something. Yeah, I think when you first see something, often the hype can sort of get you wanting to give something a bit higher rating, and then you come back to it a bit later and you're like, yeah, there's a little bit much. let's bring this down to a more realistic level.
I think it does make a difference though. Like, so seeing that in the cinema was a great experience, and it was a good, great big screen film. And then when you rewatch it, and you're rewatching it at home on a small screen, and you know, a few years have passed, I don't know, there is something in that in terms of you do pick up a bit more on sort of certain plot falls and stuff that might have gone over your head some first time when you've caught up in it and watching it together.
There's all sorts as well. Obviously, we're all going to like change, and our opinions are going to change over time as well. So there's that too.
Have you ever watched Willy Wonka again and gone, it's got worse? No, because you know, I'm taking the piss, but some films, they just don't go, and sometimes they get better. You know, you boys have talked about this before, but yeah, I couldn't even get into the first two of these ones. But I didn't, to be honest with you, I didn't even try with the second after having a bad experience with the first. So I couldn't get into the first one on the small screen. When I went to the big screen, it was all right. Yeah, fine. But I won't rewatch it on the small screen now, if I'm being honest. But was it an afternoon out of the pictures? Did I enjoy myself? Yeah, I did. Pour through a bag of pick and mix, like I don't know what.
Okay. That's true, and it's a very good point, Tepi. You know, a film that is really good quality, you'll have that hype around it, and you'll come back later and watch it again, and you'll be like, yeah, this is still brilliant. And that won't happen. It's just sometimes, maybe for more of the blockbuster kind of films that are good, but not like, you know, at the same level as something like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, you'll come back to it a bit later on and with a bit more of a clearer head and be like, yeah, let's just sort of bring this down to level a bit, and that's sort of what happened to me with the Guardians films. I think I had those rated quite highly before, and I was like, yeah, they're still good, but you know, they're not like masterpieces or anything. At the end of the day, they're Marvel films.
So when I went to see this one, I went
I think a week after it came out, and by that point the new Fast and Furious film was already out, so the Guardians films had been already pushed to a very small screen, and I struggled to get a seat. I struggled to get a seat, and I had to sit right to the front. It was surprising because, like, yeah, I know the Fast and Furious films are big and everything, but there's a Marvel film. You'd think that would be, you know, in a bit more competition for a big screen as well. But so I had to sit right at the front, which was not ideal. And I know that, Woody, you went to see it yesterday, and you were having similar issues with getting seats.
Yeah,
we almost had to cancel this.
Well, it was cancelled for about 5 minutes. So I had the exact same problem you did, Richie. Bearing in mind now, so I saw this yesterday. It's been out for 3 weeks. And for some stupid reason, they pushed it to basically the same screen that we went to go and see Knock of a Cabin in. So the screen itself is obviously very sizable, but we've only got about 6 rows of seats. And it's not
really.
Yeah, so
it seemed a bit bigger than that when we went.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, it's bigger because we're all recliners. So you've got. It's not like you're crammed in next to each other. It's a row. The rows are all full of recliners, but it only goes back about 6 or 7, I'd say. So I was on the second row, but it was fine because, you know, you could just lie back and look at it. So it was all fine that way. I went Sunday night, half past 7, and I know there's a bank holiday sort of today, but I wasn't really expecting it. Well, first of all, I wasn't expecting it to be on such a small screen. And I was just watching some football in the afternoon. I thought, I'll just check now, just have a little look, see what... And there's literally three seats left in the whole thing. So, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do this. Checked again and it was all gone. But all there's nothing there on the website. So I thought, right, well, that's the end of that then. So I messaged Richie saying, look, I'm going to have to cancel this. Tell Teb because seat's taken. And I started looking at like another going to Trafford Centre, Odeon, and going to see it there. But I saw the price of the ticket. I thought, well, I'm not doing that. And then I looked again at the Views website and there's two seats now had popped up. They're like, right, now I'm just going to go there early, get queuing, get one, and hopefully, you know, just fingers crossed that I can get in. And View at Salford is usually a quiet cinema. And Richie's right, so we've got Fast 10 out at the moment and we've got Little Mermaid out at the moment and they are sort of dominating the bigger screens. So there's a lot of people, and to be fair, I was queuing up, I got there, I was like, Jesus Christ, it rammed. And I was queuing for about 10 minutes. It was a good job I got it there early. I've never seen it like that, which is good. You know, it's good for cinemas.
Of course.
That's a positive. All the bloody great wash for going to see Little Mermaid and stuff.
Not the best films for it to be about, but all right.
No, but at least for, you know, busy on a Sunday evening.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of families and stuff, you know. And then there's this young lad and his granddad in front of me. And they asked for two tickets for Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, can you believe that? Literally, queuing in 10 minutes. And she's, you know, when we turn the screen around at the counter.
Yeah.
And there's one seat on row B, seat two. And then there's one on like row F, right at the back. So the two of them just say, well, can't do that because we're not going to be sat together.
Yeah.
I don't know, beautiful bastards. And they just walked up and I took seat B. Robbie, seat two, I'll have that one, please.
Nice.
And got in there. And it was a relief, to be honest. It was a relief. I was panicking that we weren't going to get it in. And I was just going to go today at some point today. I was looking at the screens today, but some of them are a bit bigger than the one that I went to see it on. So I don't know why they're doing that.
Everyone spoke at once then.
I was only going to ask a question. What's the crack with cinemas at the moment then in UK? Are more opening or more closing, do you reckon?
More closing, it seems like.
Closing?
Yeah.
Well, the Odeon Blackpool's closing.
Is it really? Oh, Odeon Blackpool's gone.
Yeah.
Next Monday, it's gone.
Very soon.
So I look at the cinemas here and they're all busy. They're all booming. They don't have any season ticket deals. Good. None of this limitless stuff that you boys talk about. Having said that, I do think they've innovated a bit. Like they've got the gold class lounges, which are like airport lounges inside the cinema before you go into your picture. That's a nice little idea. So you can have a little bit of a nibble before you go in, or, you know, somewhere to sit afterwards and have a chat like this. Because that's what people do when they come out of the cinema, you know. So they're making an extra bob there. And then they've got that D-box stuff that we've talked about before, you know, where you're strapped into your... Well, you're not actually strapped in, but you feel like you should be at points. Tell you, Guardians of the Galaxy you would have done. Flipping heck.
Maybe that's the problem. You should have gone to see that in D-box and then you'd have enjoyed it more. Maybe.
Yeah.
We did think about it, but that's why we did enjoy it. We went to the VMAX, which is another one that their alternatives, which is like a massive screen and bigger than normal, and then the Dolby surround sound stuff. So it's a specific, meant to be the best way to view it in Perth, right? That's what they say at least. And you can tell it is a lot better. You know, the sound's like crisp and coming from all sorts of directions. Like, yeah, it is really, really good.
Oh, that's cool. It seems to be a bit more of a struggle over here, but that's good if that's how things are going in Australia.
Well, I'm only saying it. I'm only bringing it up to say, like, why aren't any of the chains doing it there? You know, why is Odeon and what's the red one event?
Cineworld
View Cineworld view as well. Why aren't these big boys catching up?
They are doing luxury things now, and they're starting to do all these things, and a lot of them have got all these like big recliner seats now and bars, and so they are doing those kind of things, but
right,
I don't know whether it's enough or not. I don't know.
Okay.
Whether people are even feeling like they want to spend their money on that kind of shit at the moment is probably not really.
Yeah.
That is the thing, isn't it? I mean, going out to the pictures now is a very expensive thing to do. If you've got a family and two kids, you're looking at upwards of 50 quid to go and see a film. If you want to all get a ticket, and then you want to get some food, inevitably, some drink, that's not a cheap pastime. And it's,
when in reality, the kid will just be happy watching whatever's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. But I've got to say, though, so View last night, they've got a bar there and stuff and seated areas. And that was full, to be fair. That was full of people.
That's good.
The scene, what we think, well, they are shite films, aren't they? Let's be honest. Little Mermaid. But it's good to see that it is being utilised and people are sort of going out. And like I say, on a Sunday evening, it was rammed. So,
yeah.
Let's just hope it continues. I think ultimately, it all comes down to money, doesn't it? I think that's the pricing of the tickets and
breakdown, Wood. I would like to see how much they're making from tickets, how much they're making on food and beverage that people are taking into the cinema, and then how much they're making on everything else outside of the actual cinema, you know? Because they've got to diversify.
I don't know what it was for you, Wood, at the View, but when I at the Odeon, the tickets to Guardians of the Galaxy, if you're not on Limitless, were £17 each.
Ooh, dear.
So bearing in mind, you're in like the smaller screen as well.
Yeah, the Trafford Centre Odeon, that I was looking online, that was £13.50, and I thought that was a lot. £17 quid. That's more than Limitless, isn't it?
Nearly. So pretty crazy.
See, that's a problem.
Can't really believe it.
Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah, I know it's a good cinema there and stuff, but like I say, even if you're not on the bigger screen as well, I suppose a bit of a Mickey take.
Yeah, I could understand it. They do charge more if it were in like the big Dolby screen. I can understand that they've got the bigger sound system and everything. Maybe even then, they usually only charge like £2 or £3 extra.
Yeah.
No, it was just in one of their regular screens where they don't normally charge more. So
yeah, I think that's probably a bit ill thought out. That, you know, we probably thought we may be able to get some more people in because it's such a big film. But I think if that's your policy, I think that's a very, very risky one. Especially to Tep at the moment here, Cineworld's in trouble in this country. They've closed a lot of Cineworlds. Odeon had just announced about 2-3 weeks ago, wasn't it, Richie, about a batch of Odeons going. So including obviously Blackpool Odeon, Western Supermare Odeon, which I frequented, and then loads of others, like three figures in terms of sort of hundreds of cinemas.
Right. So, what are they going to do with that space? Because they're usually on industrial land, middle of nowhere. They usually got, what can you do with them? You can turn them into a big box, you can turn them into a B&Q-esque thing if you flatten it and gut it, but it's not, we don't, you know, do we really need more of that sort of stuff? Like, no, I just feel as though, yeah.
I don't know what they're doing with the Odeon in Blackpool. I don't know what they're doing with that.
I think it's some kind of, it's all part of some kind of retail complex that they're doing with it. We could really get Joseph on, because he'll know all the answers. But it's basically becoming some part of some kind of bigger retail complex. But as I understand it, the McDonald's that's also on there, that's staying open, and the Bantam's gym that's there, that's staying. So it's a shame, isn't it? It really is.
They'll be gutted there, won't they? They'll be like 90% of their custom at McDonald's is from people going to the cinema.
It's a shame it's going to
flatten
way.
It and put some more multicoloured housing in. Big white plastic windows.
But anyway, I've gone on a bit of a tangent there. But So yeah, this film, I think you sort of made a good point with the camaraderie. Woody wasn't really there as much. They were going for big emotional moments between these characters. In my opinion, they went a little bit over the top with them, and they didn't really quite hit for me. There was an interesting story with Rocket Raccoon. I don't know how spoilery we want to get with this. Are we bothered about spoilers for this film, or should we just sort of let it loose?
probably just be loose with it.
All right, we're not going to try very hard about spoilers. Yeah, so just sort of like skip ahead or stop listening if you don't want to hear spoilers for this film. But probably everyone that's bothered about it has already seen it by this point. So this thing with Rocket Raccoon and his sort of like backstory, as well as him being pretty much out of commission for most of the film. I'm not sure if they did that in the best way they could have. I don't mind the concept of it. And some of it was sort of like emotionally quite good. They were laying pretty heavy on the cuteness factor of the baby raccoons. But the way it just kept on flashing back just throughout the whole film, something didn't feel quite right about it. It felt like I was watching an episode of Lost.
Flashback was awful. Awful.
Yeah, I wasn't into it really.
Shoving them in throughout, really, didn't they?
And it did seem sort of inconsequential. Where they were putting those flashbacks just seemed to be random. I feel like if you're going to do that kind of thing, it should sort of line up a bit with things that are happening in the present day, but that wasn't really happening. It really just seemed like, okay, we haven't really seen much about this Rocket story yet, and Bradley Cooper needs his check, so let's flashback to that story again. It was all right, some of it wasn't. Sorry, go on.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, mate. I think it all felt very, very manipulative of the audience to sort of really ham up like the emotional bits. And, you know, when you're overly telling me, look, this is a sad bit, this is a sad bit, it does the opposite effect for me. Some people will say, oh, how sad it is, and like, yeah, how cute all the little raccoons are and all that crap. But it's just so clear what they're trying to do to the audience.
Yeah.
A lot of them will fall for it, but yeah, I could see straight through it. And
I felt very manipulated. Mm. And the music in those moments was so overbearing.
Oh, it was embarrassing. Actually embarrassing. Like the strings and the big crescendo and stuff.
Is it just prefabricated from other movies, though, you know, like they've just, these are the things that work in other movies, so it's just kind of like shoehorned in.
It almost feels like an obligation because, oh, this is the third film, we have to have this kind of like crescendo here. But honestly, there were emotional beats in the previous two films that worked a lot better and were not as over the top and manipulative.
Yeah, like the stuff in the second one with Chris Pratt going to find his dad, and then you know, he thinks his dad is this great doer of wonderful things, and he's got good intentions and all that, and then it flips it, and the way we tell that, I thought, was actually really good. And we didn't go down that road at all about Chris Pratt not having a father for years and all that kind of thing, which he mentions. They don't make you feel sorry for him as a child or as a grown adult.
Which has always been a big part of those films as well. In both of those films, there was a lot of sort of this underlying thing of Chris Pratt's family and his mother dying of cancer and being abducted as a kid. And maybe they felt like they'd sort of already tackled that enough. And I guess I can understand that, but it just seems a bit strange for there to be not really anything about that in this, and there's not really, I felt like there wasn't really much for Chris Pratt's character at all. He was just focused on this Gamora thing,
Well, the thing with him in the third one was his granddad, but he thought was dead because people don't live beyond the age of 50 or whatever.
That's true. I'd actually forgotten about that, to be fair. So I guess what I just said was
he got
not
mentioned.
True, but...
anyway, no, because he got mentioned and then he moved back onto Rocket, and then right at the end he goes back to Earth and sees his granddad again. It shoved in there.
I guess the reason why I was sort of feeling like there wasn't really anything like that in there is because all that stuff with the granddad was completely forgettable. And not really leaned on. So again, maybe just leaned on out of obligation. But he seemed mostly focused on Gamora, and then that mm-hmm. storyline didn't really conclude in any kind of satisfying way at all. Nothing really happened.
Is that the purple lass that you're talking
about?
She's
green. She's green.
Oh, green. Oh, it's the purple fella, isn't it? The green one. It's what I mean. Like, you know. Why do that? Why make her green? Like,
she's an alien.
But
also Tepe. That's sort of like that's probably like a bit of an unfair criticism because these are comic characters from the comics previously, so they sort of have to make her green.
Because when I think alien, I think Captain Spock. You know, just slightly different.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, I mean, there's different kinds of aliens, surely.
Yeah, no.
Also,
in
Star Trek, there was a lot of green women and lots of different like.
You got that sci-fi, and you watch Star Trek.
Yeah, that's
interesting. You know how it is.
No, I really don't actually.
confusing. In seriousness, though, about that storyline with the missus and, you know... Do you really think that... I did not buy the whole... It really wasn't constructed well for me that they were... And that's probably because I didn't watch the others, right? But picture, I don't know what it was, but the acting, the lines, the... I don't know. Did it feel like a real relationship, like a real, what they were trying to do with it didn't eventuate? Like, I was having to go, okay, all right, that's what they're trying to do there. Rather than just washing over it and going, yeah, that is what they've done, you know, and it's brilliant and whatever, but it just shoehorned.
Well, here's where I think is the problem with the Marvel system in general, because it's all a bit awkward because... they established a bit of a relationship or a bit of a will they, won't they kind of thing with those two in the previous two films. And they were building the characters and building this relationship. And then Infinity War and Endgame happens. Did you see those films, Temp?
Yeah.
Right. So that's where it's like, oh, we need all the Marvel characters that we've previously established into this one big, massive film.
Yeah.
And so they did that, and the Guardians of the Galaxy were in those films.
Yeah.
And then they killed off Gamora in it. They literally killed her off. And then there was a whole time travel thing in which they ended up getting an alternative universe's version of Gamora back into their universe.
It's too much. It's too much.
Well, yeah.
This is the point, right?
Yeah, but anyway, now she's there, and it's a completely different character. It's a character that's never met Chris Pratt before, and now they're just like, okay, James Gunn, time for you to make your third film now. Off you go. After like basically fucking him in the ass in terms of the characters that he's been building and the relationships he's been building, they just fuck all that up for a different film, and then they're just like, okay, here you go. He's got to do something with this now, where she doesn't know him, and then she has to basically try and rebuild this whole thing altogether, and it just didn't come together in a very nice way.
Didn't add anything for me. No. Could have completely chopped her out of it, you know?
Yeah, probably.
Or brought a new lover in. Bring somebody else in. He's depressed at the start of the film. Bring somebody else in. You know,
I think that would have been a bit fucked. I don't know that there was anything they could do really to to fix that problem. I don't know that a new lover would have just pissed people off even more.
I mean, this is a problem with Marvel, isn't it? Like, we've said it so many times over the years. Like, we just can't. When you think someone has died or they're going to kill someone off, we seemingly always find a way to bring them back. And, you know, we had... So if in Infinity War, then, did Gamora get killed in that one when she disappeared? Was she one of them?
Yes, she was killed in Infinity War.
Right.
Thanos threw her off a cliff.
Right. So, you know, in any normal circumstance, you get thrown off a cliff and you're brown bread, aren't you?
Yeah.
And
she was.
And I don't know if this is... she was. But I don't know if this is a problem with... I don't know if Into the Spider-Verse has a lot to answer for this, but like this... different universes, parallel universes, alternate realities now that we're getting in a lot of these films.
Oh, yeah.
Is seeing basically an infinite number of possibilities in characters and being able to bring people back from the dead and being able just to kind of, in a way, write your own rules.
Yeah, it's a mix of Into the Spider-Verse and Rick and Morty that sort of fucked this all up for everyone.
Yeah. We're nowhere near as funny as Rick and Morty or as good as Into the Spider-Verse. So I think, you know, as much as we love that film, and obviously we've got the second one's coming out next week, but I think that has kind of screwed a lot of these. I mean, we already had a full of plot holes anyway, these Marvel films, but now it's just seemingly ridiculous that if someone dies in one film, you can't have a response to it because they're like, oh, they'll be back in some way or shape or form. They'll be back. Mm. And I agree with Tep. I think it would have been great to actually take one of the members of the Guardians, kill him off, and see where you can go with it. Because at the start of the film, Chris Pratt was drinking and he was depressed, he was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been good to see how he would have sort of developed from that state to how he was at the end of the film.
Without
being there.
Maybe if they just completely committed to her being dead. And him having to get over, maybe. But I do think there's just a fundamental issue. Sorry.
No, sorry, mate. I was going to say there's also a point in this film where obviously the Rocket Raccoon is on his deathbed for the whole film.
Yeah.
And they can't kill him off. He somehow survives again. And then there's a point where I thought Drax was going to go, where he got shot in his back and in his front. Yeah, he seemingly made a recovery and it looked like he was going to go. We had this big emotional bit that Drax was going to go. But no, he recovers, we bring him back. And it's just a shame. It really holds these films back, like just being able to just commit and just kill off a big name and be like, wow, have that kind of moment. But
yeah,
you know,
I really think someone should have died in this film, if that's the kind of thing, if that's the kind of crescendo they wanted, then someone probably should have died. They could have done this thing of hinting that Rocket was going to die throughout the whole thing, and then take it another direction and a different character dies to sort of like, you know, bait you into thinking one thing and something else happens. But someone probably should have died.
to have
that kind of emotional moment.
There was only a bloody tree stump left of... I just had to look up his name. That's what I was doing.
Groot.
Yeah. Bloody, if you try chopping down the tree, see what happens. It don't grow about that quick, does it?
No. That is sort of something that's been established in the previous films, though.
Yeah.
About his character.
Yeah, he does kind of regenerate very, very quickly.
But maybe that's what they should do with all Marvel characters then, if they're going to keep bringing them back, like, you know, perhaps they should have done with that with Green Lass. Maybe she should bounce back.
Yeah, absolutely. Groot, again, I think was like sort of not very effective in this film as he was in the second and first one. I think he's a good character in the previous film.
He had a few bits in this one, didn't he?
When
him and Chris Pratt went to the embassy, if you will, and he was them two had a bit of a moment. But yeah, again, I mean, I actually think we got more out of him when he was pint-sized in the second one. You know, he had a big part to play in the second one towards the end. And he seemed to be doing a lot more when he was a little Groot, baby Groot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who does he remind you of as a character?
Who does he remind me of?
Vin Diesel.
They don't remind me of Vin Diesel.
In another franchise, like of another you know series of films, it's a very similar character. Don't do a lot of talking, but
Oddjob
comes. Oddjob. No, funnily enough, not James Bond this time. But although that, to be fair, there's another character. That sort of.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who.
Chewie, Chewbacca.
Okay.
Chewie, Groot, very, you know, very similar. Yeah. They're heavily involved in action scenes, and you know, and they have like the Chewie's got his grunt, and Groot's got his group.
You know, same Groot, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the others just understand them for no reason. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny.
You can't pay for that analysis, Jack Clark. You cannot pay for it.
Hey, no, it's a good point there, Taps. Absolutely. One other thing.
No, go on, because I've interrupted you loads. Go on.
I was just going to say, one other thing that I feel was nowhere near as effective in this one as it was, again, in the previous films, are the needle drops of the big... The big music moments. I feel like those were done in meaningful ways in the previous films, and in this they were again just seemingly at random. Here's a cool song. Okay, it doesn't really feel earned.
I mean, in both the other ones, the second one especially, that fantastic opening sequence with the music set to that. The opening scene, what a way to start a film. And with this one, I agree, mate. I mean, we just tried to shove these songs in there just to say, look, this is a cool song from the 80s, let's press play and let's go from there,
which again is what a lot of films are doing now.
I saw Air on Saturday, the film about Nike getting Michael Jordan.
Oh yeah,
Really, really good sports drama type film. But my biggest takeaway and the biggest criticism was just the use of the music. Just had no, because it's set in the '80s, right? But they felt that every 5 minutes they had to remind the audience it was set in the '80s by playing a song from the '80s, and it just did not fit with what is these like men trying to broker a deal in sort of stuffy offices and stuff, and we're just playing that 80s ballads and just to do it just because it's a good song. And like, we know it's a good song, but
yeah, it's been a really good manipulation technique for films to trick people into thinking the film is good because they hear a song they like,
I agree with that. I think it's definitely done poorly in the third Guardians film compared to the others. I'll tell you what else I could not stand was the main villain, Sire, in this film. I thought he was dreadful, and the performance is that way. He's just shouting at everyone and everything for the whole duration, every scene he was in, he just shouted his head off. And
yeah, especially towards the end.
Couldn't stand him.
Yeah. I think I didn't hate him to begin with. I think I was sort of on board at the start, but I think progressively he did sort of get more and more irritating as the film went on.
So what do you think of him, Teb?
I didn't hate as much as that, but I
wasn't really loving it by the end.
I didn't like him at all. But Will Poulter was, he had an interesting sort of arc because
He did, but I was expecting a lot more from him.
Well, that's why I thought, like, it was hardly used in that first hour and a bit. I was like, surely we're going to have more of Will Poulter, because why do we get him in just for a couple of scenes? And I like the way he kind of came back a bit towards the end.
Yeah. He was the gold boy, Tepe, you know.
Yeah, gold flying lad.
Yeah, it was all right. It was that. See, that's what I like about the connection to the other films, because I actually thought that one was done quite delicately. Like, you know, even like the scene where he joins in the hug, you know, towards the end. Like I think that was all right. That was good. You know, it wasn't overly forced. Yeah. It was, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was quite funny, and probably one of the funnier parts of the film. And there were some funny moments that I did like. I've talked a lot of shit about the film now, but there were things I liked about it, and I liked him. But I thought he was the main villain before going to see it, and so I was sort of expecting like a lot more. But I was a little disappointed that he wasn't in it more than he actually was.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure if that's because of the way it's been marketed to us. I also thought the same thing. And that's maybe I was thinking, oh, Will Poulter's been vacant for about 40, 50 minutes of his film now. And I didn't know that guy was going to be in there. Maybe that's why I found him so annoying, because like, this shouty man is not Will Poulter. You know what I thought we were going to get out of the villain. But I think Tep's right there, because I actually think the gold people in the second film were really, really funny. Some of the funniest bits of that film, some of the best bits of comedy came from his mother in the second bit. I thought they're hilarious. So it's good. I liked how their story had moved on from second to third.
I agree with that.
There was
the odd joke that sort of got a little bit of a laugh out of me. There were a lot that didn't. There was a lot of cringy humour. There was a very annoying moment in which an alien like crafted a laughing emoji out of thin air. Did you catch that, Woody?
Oh yeah.
That annoyed the hell out of me. But it created the laughing emoji that looks exactly like the one we have here on Earth. So that just made no sense to me. Why couldn't it just, like, if you wanted to do that, just have it be a new creation of a different kind of laughing face? Oh, it's just for everyone to go, oh, there's the laughing emoji. I know that. It's like so irritating.
Should have made it purple.
I mean, that would have been something.
Yeah. Or green.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was some good action, I think, as well. And also, I liked the design of quite a lot of things. I liked the coloured spacesuit things that they went into. And I liked that sort of area of the film. I liked that sort of heist thing they did on that planet. I think there was some good moments.
That was my favourite bit by mile.
I think that's true for me as well.
20 minutes, that was great. It actually was funny. The action was good. It was it was sort of easy to follow. So I said at the top of my sort of review that, especially towards the end, I found the action to be really clunky, and I didn't really know where I should be looking when they're on the spaceship, and it's a bit darker, and it's just a bit difficult to sort of see what's going on.
Yeah. I agree with that. And there was just like, it looked different, and it looked cool, and there was some kind of cool designs. But there was an action sequence at the end, which I did think was cool, and it was really going for being really cool, and like they'd really put a lot of effort into that. You know, where they're sort of fighting down that corridor, and it's like almost like a one shot thing. They're all fighting together, and it's like a really big sort of like. Obviously, it's not made as much of an impression on YouTube, but I did think that looked
vaguely. I mean,
good.
No, I don't think of it. I don't think I've thought that much about it because I can't really remember it. I was yesterday.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, there was like a big action scene between like everyone at the end there, down this corridor. It was pretty impressive, and you could tell they were really going for it. But I think I think I've pretty much gone over all the main points I wanted to. I don't know if everyone else feels the same.
Yeah.
Tap, you got anything else to add?
Nah, no wise words, boys. Just like, I know we'll get to it, but just very average in my books. Well, no, we'll get to our scorings, but
I'd say what I didn't enjoy was the lack of Sly Stallone in this one. I thought I wanted to see a bit more of him.
Oh yeah,
because
that would have been nice.
He was all right in the second film. When he popped up in the second one, God, what's he doing in a Marvel film? But and especially the way the second one ended, we all was sort of scavengers getting back together. I thought we might have seen a bit more of them as well, but it didn't really happen.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
And Richard, did you know who voiced the pet walrus that Rocket was in the cage with?
I did. I have been told that, but I can't remember. Who was it?
Asim Chowdhury, who was Chibuddy G.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Very, very
Village. He's Village.
I was Village. I didn't like that character. That is Village.
I liked Lila or whatever she's called. She was good.
Yeah, I liked her. It was a bit predictable, that whole, where that was all going, though.
Yes, but we had some nice moments of them playing together in the cages and stuff. That was all That's nice, true. Wasn't it?
Yeah. It was, actually. So, I mean, I've got Jack's review here. I don't know if we're interested in sort of delving into that at all, since he didn't bother to leave us a message.
Don't give him any airtime, then.
Nah, fuck him.
Right. Yeah, he's written too many words, mate.
It is pretty long, actually, to be fair. Yeah, fuck it. Yeah. You wanted your opinion, you should have got on here, Jack.
Maybe he's just give us one little highlight that he's pointed out.
Okay.
And we'll slag him off because he can't defend himself. Because he's not here.
There you go. He's agreed with you boys. Will Poulter wasn't given enough to do.
Yeah, he was.
That's what he says.
He says and he also says even the needle drops sometimes didn't completely work. I think they didn't work at all. but I have to base my rating on how I felt by the end, and it was really fulfilled and happy. I had a fantastic time back in the Guardians universe. You don't have to base your rating on that, Jack. You can base it on the flaws that you found about the film all the way through it, if you want. Yeah.
Can I just quote just one sentence, please?
Oh, please. Yes.
I can genuinely imagine children who go and see this film might be really scared of some of it. Jack, what are you talking about, mate? Like,
stop imagining kids.
Yeah. Stop getting into the head of kids, mate.
He must be talking about the bits with Rocket being sort of tortured and stuff.
Tortured, yeah. That probably would scare kids.
Yeah.
It wasn't like proper full on animal cruelty to me. I mean, obviously it was what they did. I meant in terms of
they've given walrus wheels. Given a walrus wheels. That's not cruelty. Rip, that's helping them out, if you ask me.
Like rips the arms off that otter.
I meant in terms of like what they actually showed us as an audience, like they're manipulating him and sort of torturing him in that way.
I would imagine he's thinking of that when they actually shoot those animals or whatever. I don't know.
The most graphic bit I thought was when Rocket, after that, when Lila got shot, was then Rocket just like rips that guy's face off. I thought that was quite graphic.
Oh, yeah. It was.
I thought, you know, for what rating was it? 13 or? I don't know. I thought, if I was a kid, I'd think that was a bit graphic.
A bit much, yeah.
No, I do agree with you. I just jibing with you, Jack. Just playing with you, mate. Yeah. You'll be safe in your bed tonight, though, mate. Tuck yourself in.
You're reading bedtime here's some, story.
here's something from him that I don't agree with. He's put, this is the best Pom Clemente has been in a Marvel film. She's just fantastic. I don't agree with that. I feel like this was her worst performance.
So who's she? She was the...
Which one? Who's she?
She's the one that plays Mantis. The
one with the antenna.
Yeah. I thought she was really over the top and not very funny in this one. I thought she was funny in the second one.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought she was funny in the second one. Yeah. I thought she's funny in the second one.
But Jack seems to think this was the best one she's done. I don't agree with that.
As somebody who didn't watch the second one, I thought she was all right, actually. She was, to me, she was all right. Yeah.
Fair enough. Right, well, shall we move on to favourite scenes then? We've sort of already touched on them a bit, but Tepi, have you got a favourite scene?
I liked when they landed in the New Earth bit. Just seeing them, the people's faces and like it just all the clash of the worlds
and not a bad shout, actually.
Yeah, the scariness of what suburbia looks like. Christ,
Drax throwing that ball at that kid's face got a big laugh in the cinema when I was.
Yeah,
that's not a bad shout.
That was a bit. I think for me, it's got to be the heist bit. We talked about it before. That was the most fun I was having in that bit when the four of them sort of got into the whatever that complex was. And good bits of humour with sort of the interaction with the guards and stuff. The guards themselves had a good bit.
Nathan Fillion.
And then we had a good bit of action after that. So yeah, I'd say that sort of passage in the heist building.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that'd be the same for me. That'd be mine. All right.
I'll tell you what my worst scene was.
Oh, go on.
The bizarre decision to turn it into Noah's Ark at the end when we had all these animals running through trying to save everything. Wasn't it? We got the telekinesis dog, who we also haven't talked about, but the Russian dog doing holding two ships together, and then it just turns into bloody Noah's Ark with all two of everything just running through. He's like, what's going on here? Terrible.
Terrible. I didn't find that good boy stuff very funny with the Russian dog.
Again, I don't know if you're trying to just be cute by having like a dog, and all that kind of.
Trying to be cute and trying to do like internet humor. I felt like anyway. Wasn't into that. The worst for me, I think, was Drax's whole. He had a whole arc of like everyone calling him stupid, and then at the end, he like knows the language of those kids in the cages. And it's like, oh, you never... And like, oh, why didn't you say you knew that language? It's just like, oh, you didn't ask. That was really cringy and annoying to me. I didn't like that. But anyway.
Again, that all kind of links into that, like, Noah's Ark bit, but saving the kids and saving the animals and all that. Again, they're trying to get you, aren't they, with the emotion side of things, and just wasn't doing anything for me.
No. Okay. Ratings then. What are we going to give this one out of 10, everybody?
I'd probably say it's slightly above average, I think.
That's how I feel.
I've spoken a lot of negatively about it, but there were some good bits in there, and there's bits I enjoyed. But I think which maybe sort of carries it over. So I think I'd go for a 5.5.
Okay. Tepi, you know what you're going to give it?
Yeah, below average for me, like, because I wouldn't rewatch it. Only works in the cinema for me, and that's because of, just the everything that you get with that. 4.5 from me. Poor enough. Below par.
I also wouldn't watch this again. No way.
No.
I think I could see myself watching again just in the context of like ending the trilogy, I suppose. Also, Fliss hasn't seen it, so she might want to see it at some point. So I'll probably watch it with her. But it certainly wouldn't be like one I rush to or whatever. I'd certainly watch the previous two before I would bother with this one. For me, I found it fairly decent. Didn't hate it by any means, but did not love it and was a bit disappointed by certain things. I think it's a 6 for me overall. So, yeah.
A bit bad for Tep because we've gone from the highs of Willy Wonka to the lows of
Gozer. I mean, you've got to come down on your highs, haven't you?
Hey, we could have gone lower, couldn't we?
Could have gone lower.
But we'll do Casino Royale soon, mate. We'll get that started.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's they're playing in concert again. The orchestra play the score to James Bond films. And yeah, we went to watch Casino Royale on that, but they're playing another Bond one soon. Bloody brilliant, mate. I don't like the orchestra. It's good, but I wouldn't go and just watch an orchestra. But watching it to the playing a film, you end up watching it for ages. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Great story. So
is a film
as well.
Is the film on in the background as they're playing?
Yeah, and the only thing that's on they leave certain aspects of the audio playing, so the characters' voices, but they chop out all background music. I don't know how they do it. Stick it in Movie Maker, I bet.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Does.
All right, let's move on from Guardians of the Galaxy then. Any other films anyone wants to bring up before we wrap up? I know it's not been long since you were last on Tepi, but have you watched anything in the last week or couple of weeks or so?
No, but I don't. I have, but I did want to bring up one thing very cool recently. I don't think I said this on the last one, but we actually went to Warner Brothers World in Gold Coast. Yeah.
In where?
On the Gold Coast, on the other side of Oz. So we flew 5 hours on a Friday night, landed in Saturday morning.
Wow.
And had a couple of days there for the weekend and then flew back. But we went to Warner Brothers World. It's actually, you know, they got all the, you got your Superman rides and all the DC stuff. You got Batman.
Cool.
Yeah. It was good themes. It had a bit of Harry Potter. And what did they have? We only went and had a corner sweetie shop was branded as.
Oh, hey, Willy Wonka.
It was. Yeah, they had a little Willy Wonka.
Is that where you were when you sent us that video?
Yes. Yeah, it would have been. Okay. Yeah. So
that's cool.
Half the park was shut, but we had a fantastic couple of rides on Superman. Absolutely fantastic ride that is. I mean, you know, we had the luxury of growing up near the Pleasure Beach, right? You know, big one and Fusion. But this was something else, you know. We learnt the words by the end of it. We went round on it that many times. Yeah.
Sing along to it.
We're going to push you out of here. We're going to push you out fast. Superman fast.
Okay.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Then Superman's behind the roller coaster and it just kick off. Bang, straight out you go. Right into the open air. Yeah.
Nice.
Fabulous.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I like going to those sort of things. Good fun.
Yeah. Yeah, a bit of something.
Not as good as the Grand National.
Yeah.
Iron Brew.
It's not made of wood.
Yeah, Iron Brew, right?
Iron Brew.
Yeah.
The whole trip was good though, boys, and you know we need to get away for the weekend, so it was nice.
Yeah, it does sound good. Great. Good stuff.
You didn't go there for your honeymoon.
Well, yeah, I had to tie her over because she's been wanting me to go with her to Disney World for a long time. Since we met. So I've admitted to Disneyland at Christmas. We're going Hong Kong.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
On the way back from. I think it is Hong Kong. Singapore's got some, hasn't it? But
there is one in Hong Kong. I've been to that one.
Yeah. Any good?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's been a long time. I was a kid, but yeah, it's cool.
Well, we're going there in December or January. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Cracking. Have a nice time. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll just mention one that I watched recently, and it was because it was one that was lent to me by Mr. Henry James Woodsford. I watched Tangerine the other day by Sean Baker, and absolutely loved it. It was.
It's not about Blackpool Football Club, is it?
They made a documentary on Blackpool.
I saw your face there. No.
I was just thinking there's only one copy floating around. It must be Blackpool. Yeah.
No, I think if you put this on expecting a documentary on Blackpool Football Club, then you'd be in for a bit of a shock.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's actually about transsexual prostitutes, Tepe.
Oh, right.
So could be set in Blackpool.
yeah, right.
But no, it's just great, and I absolutely love his filmmaking. Now that I've only seen two of his films now, but I'll be watching The Florida Project. I think this week as well, because you've also lent me that one. I can see absolutely why you were raving about this one. Absolutely loved it. Great film. Would recommend.
Glad. So the fun thing with that is that it is filmed entirely on an iPhone, that film.
That's true, yes. That's very, very cool. And it looks great, honestly. The film, it's shot really well, and very, very, very inspiring if you want to
what's that one called? What?
Tangerine.
You are talking about Tangerine. I thought you were talking about the other one.
Yeah.
So Tangerine's filmed entirely on an iPhone.
Yeah. And it'll be quite an old model as well, because it's probably about
it was the iPhone 5S. Which, wow, right. Yeah, it's surprising, yeah.
It looks great, though, doesn't it? Like, you know, if you factor that in.
Oh, yeah,
It looks legit.
You wouldn't be able to tell that it was filmed on an iPhone.
Wow.
I think he downloaded, like, he paid for apps to edit it on, so, like, editing software and sort of saturation and all that kind of stuff. So
it was filmed on the app Filmic Pro, which is the same app that I've used when I was sort of filming, you know, that tea thing I did, Wood. Mm.
Yeah.
So that does sort of improve things, but that's only like £3. So
it's crazy, isn't it? It's
pretty cool. Yeah.
But yeah, I think you'll enjoy the project then as well, Richie. You can tell his style's there, but it's a step up in terms of sort of budget and what he's able to do. The colours in that ring, like, it's just gorgeous, and Willem Dafoe's in there. So always worth watching Willem.
No, I'm looking.
Big name.
I'm looking forward to it. I didn't realise that he was such a long-standing filmmaker as well. He's been making films since like in 2000, which I didn't realise, because I only sort of heard his name around the time that Florida Project was coming out.
Yeah, I think that was his big release, and stuff he's done before then, it's been very, very small fry. Hopefully carries on to do great things like Red Rocket we had last year as well, didn't we? So.
Oh, yeah. I love that one. So, yeah, that was that. That's pretty much the only thing I'm bothered about bringing up. Have you got anything, Woody, you want to do before we wrap up?
Yeah, I just mentioned Air before. So this is on Prime at the moment. Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Jason Bateman are in it, and it's set in the 80s, and it's all basically it's all about Nike, who were at the time an underperforming brand, which I know is funny to think of now. Obviously, we know them as a global giant, but in the 1984, they were like bottom of the pile in terms of popularity amongst not just sportsmen, but like just people in general. So no one wore Nike and stuff like that. It's a struggling brand. Converse were the top, had the top of the market share. They had 56% of the market share in the 80s. Then it was Adidas, then it was Nike, like the big three. And basically, it's just these three actors are the characters. It's obviously set on a true story. They're all execs at Nike, and they've got a budget for the year of which sports people to sort of get on their roster. And Matt Damon's character comes up with this new idea to base the whole or throw a whole budget at one player, which is Michael Jordan, who's like a at the time just a high school basketballer and obviously destined for greatness, but sort of untouched at this point into professional basketball.
He's not that good, is he?
And the whole thing, yeah. He's all right, isn't he? He's all right.
Yeah, he's all right.
But the whole film is basically just set on, there's no focus on him at all. So we never see Michael Jordan, we only ever see the back of his head. And it's not about him as a basketball player. It's just about mainly these three people trying to broker this deal. And it's actually really good. There's a lot of funny moments in there. It's very quick paced for what sounds like a bit of a slow film. It was actually really entertaining and actually quite interesting actually how they did it. Viola Davis plays Michael Jordan's mum, and she always puts in a good performance.
Yeah,
and everyone all around did a great job. It was also directed by Ben Affleck, he also directs it and is the CEO of Nike. And I've seen two of his films now that he's directed and starred in, Argo and Air, and they're both really good. He's definitely got a certain style and way of doing things. I would recommend it. I think I'm not that fussed about some basketball. I did like The Last Dance, and that was a lockdown watch, but it's not about that. It's about the off-field stuff, which I think works really well.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and this is another one that I think Jack, just looking on Letterboxd, Jack saw it in the cinema. It was out for a brief period, and then we just put it on streaming or do it sort of simultaneously. For this, I appreciate the fact that it was on streaming, because I didn't at the time sort of make an effort to go out and see it just because it didn't really sell me out much, but it's good. It's a good film. I suppose the other thing, which is probably definitely worth mentioning, is I finally got around to watching Glass Onion, Glass Onion, Knives Out.
Yes, yeah.
And I did not like it that much.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Very, very poor, and the big step down from the first one, because I really liked the first one. Yeah. Didn't care for the characters, the story. I thought the script was awful. And I just bored by the whole thing. It was really, really dull. And a huge disappointment, I must say, because I did really enjoy Knives Out.
Grace had seen it but before, hadn't she? What did she say about it?
She says it's better than Knives Out, did she? She's probably the only person that thinks that, I think, but certainly it came on the episode anyway. It's a shame. It's a big disappointment for me. I still enjoyed like Daniel Craig's performance. But everyone else is just a bit robotic. And
what did you think of the woman? I can't remember her name. That's sort of like the woman that was working with Daniel Craig.
She's all right. Those bits were the most enjoyable, I think.
Okay.
I think those two did the best job performance wise. Like even Batista, I don't think he had much to do. And what do you say, Tep?
No, I was just going to say, nice little balcony. That very nice little chilled out scene. I won't mind a little pad there, wherever they were.
Yeah.
Wherever they chat. Yeah. Flipping heck, she must be on some bunts. Christ.
But also, I think, I don't know, maybe I appreciate they tried to do something different by move it to like this exotic location and have it on a much more bigger, grander scale, but it was missing a lot of elements that I liked that made the first one a good film. I didn't have a flow. It didn't have much of a flow. I thought the first one actually went really well. I've seen it a couple of times. It just had certain rhythm to it, which I don't think this one never really got going for me. And I think it's probably because, as I said, you know, if you're not invested in the characters, it's quite hard to sort of get behind them in it. So, a real shame. A real shame. I'm certainly not looking forward to the planned third one.
That was what I was just about to ask you about.
So, you know, I don't think we needed another one of these films, and we certainly don't need a third. So,
no, I guess he's sort of trying to like bring back those types of films, I guess, or like the Poirot type things. I don't know.
But
with a bit of a spin on them.
Yeah, these murder mysteries are definitely making a sort of a comeback. I saw See How They Run not that long ago, and that was actually quite funny. It was like a bit of a piss take of them, a bit of a satire of them. That was really good. And I believe the winner of the Palme d'Or at Cannes is a French murder mystery. So they're definitely...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's definitely flavour of the month, isn't it? This kind of style.
Yeah.
This genre, I should say.
Is that down to him, do you reckon?
Well, I mean, before then, I couldn't really name any others that were coming out. So it's got to be a big factor, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fair enough. Fair play. Cool. Well, I guess that's all everyone's got. Then probably best to
should I also mention it? Me and Chives and Grace, because Grace put it on, we watched a few episodes of Queer Eye on Netflix and actually enjoyed it.
Oh,
do you know what program? You know what it is?
I've heard of it. I don't really know much about it.
About five gay men in America
go
in, so pick, usually it's like the other half or a friend of some absolute state who's let himself go. You know, big redneck with a big derby and a beard and this kind of thing. And they go in and like give him a makeover, sort his house out, sort his life out. It's just a really fun, fulfilling program. You see him stay at the start and he turns into a man at the end kind of thing. And it's actually quite good. We watched quite a few of that.
We'll be on it in a few years, boys.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's definitely going to vote you in, Tep. They always let himself go. Midlife crisis.
Well, all right, very interesting. Watch there. It's quite an old show, isn't it? It's been going for quite a while, has it?
Yeah. We've got about 7 or 8 series on there, but because Grace watched them all, she kind of picked the best ones that we would like. So now, like, the more modern episodes, she doesn't prefer as much as the older ones, because the older ones is like your 60-year-olds. Well, the first episode is probably the best. This guy from Texas, his massive derby and his beard down here and stuff. And they're the best ones to do because they're just the biggest states. Like, seeing them get a makeup.
All right.
Yeah. If you ever spare 40 minutes, you would put one on. It's a fun watch.
Yeah, well, maybe I will, yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see myself getting into that. All right, on that note then, I guess we'll just move on to say that you can email us at filmnight@yahoo.co.uk if you want. Please follow us on Twitter @filmnight_ and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast that you found us on. Thanks for coming on, Tep, and taking over for...
thanks, boys.
Friend of the show, Jack Francis.
It's great to have you.
Yeah, always great to have you on. Always a good laugh. And yeah, looking forward to the next one. But yeah, other than that, unless anybody's got anything else they'd like to say, then I guess I'll say it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.